Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Nobody else could have completed them. Where you could take anybody in the world, but it had to be A and it had to be B for this to work, because I followed their character journey. They hit the moment where everything was going wrong, but because character A is like this and B is like this, that's the reason that their relationship would work and nobody else could get through that.
Trauma bonding is a thing.
Do you feel like we've ever trauma bonded?
Maybe a little. There's things. We've gone through some stuff together. It's like a
couple things, yeah.
Yeah. We've had those like depressing moments at the kitchen table at 3 a.m. going like, oh fuck.
Oh, dude.
Things aren't looking too great right now.
Yeah, what do we do? Oh man, we should start a channel.
Welcome everyone to the Tudor Ramble Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today, we're talking about why fantasy typically sucks with romance.
Okay, whoa, don't end the sentence there. I love fantasy. So, we're talking all about romance today, and how romance in fantasy is dead, and Richard and I, professionals in the romantic department, are here to revive it.
We're going to bring the spice back to fantasy. We're going to figure it out.
You thought you knew romanticism. You thought your ACOTARs were... Listen, we know romance, okay?
We did an ACOTAR video.
We read an entire romanticism. We read one of them. Now we understand it all.
Exactly. We're experts now.
So we are going to talk about why it typically isn't the best in fantasy and what we think makes a great romance, if a romance is necessary in some stories. And the very first creme de la creme reason of why romance, this is in the zeitgeist, that people don't like romance in fantasy, or just it comes off wrong a lot of the times, especially sci-fi, too.
I think sci-fi is a much worse culprit than fantasy, generally.
Now,
it's just my feeling.
Let me paint you a picture, Rich.
Mm-hmm.
Man in 50s, gray hair, smoking a pipe, rocking in his chair, with his wife and his kids who are off past college, going, how do I want to live the rest of my life? Oh, let me think philosophically about, let me study the nature of man, or let me look at how I can create this world like none other and create a language on its own. I will create a new language. I will explore. Do you think romance is their number one priority?
You would hope so. Their wives need some loving.
We're here to tell those authors, wake up, okay? Go love your wives. And the reason we're saying only husbands to wives here, for example, is typically when we're talking about bad romance is we see it in a lot of male-written stories. I think we can stereotype well enough.
Oh, no. Yeah, we can.
Emma Wang, fantastic romance.
Oh, no. In general, the main perpetrators of bad romance in fantasy and sci-fi is...
It's us.
It's us. It's us guys.
We are the cause of the issue. We'll take full responsibility. We're here to fix our half of the agreement in life, okay? We're here to fix our male proportional half. And the part of the reason that romance is just seen as so bad is, it's the people writing it, typically. And also, second, the people writing it and the reason they're writing that genre is because the exact author I described is usually writing fantasy and sci-fi for the purpose of everything but romance. If they're looking at magic, world creation, the characters they want to explore, or this crazy
the philosophical idea of what is man.
Yeah, that is the goal generally, and that's also what readers for certain... I mean, it's definitely fantasy is broad enough to this point where there's your romanticism. There's all these sorts of books. We're kind of pinpointing on that classical fantasy that you think of when you think, oh, American literature, fantasy...
Farm boy goes on adventure to save the world.
Farm boy goes burr.
Yeah.
Basically.
Big sword, legendary, goes around, goes to the next village... finds, you know, the most gorgeous woman in the village who
she's 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Every time, for some reason.
And also, he's madly in love with him. The minute she lays eyes on him.
And his whole life, no woman really talked to him.
Exactly.
And he was always the outcast. But then he goes on this grand adventure where this hot thing just wants to devour him.
Also, all the other women are throwing themselves at his feet.
Left and right.
Left and right, man. Yeah, so... If we describe something that you maybe have read on, maybe you get what we're talking about now.
Which is why sometimes the romance in it doesn't usually take away from a great story. Sometimes it can draw back a story, sometimes.
Sure, but often it's more of a minor distraction, and with the Wheel of Time, I'd say the romance is the only point of levity in their story.
To me,
most of the humor moments, like all of
Randall
Thor... is suffering. He's not doing so hot in that story. All times, it's just burdens and suffering. Unless there's a little bit of romance. And then you see, a little bit of levity. Funny romance, sad quarrels. It's a tiny problem in his life. And then back to, you're gonna die, you're gonna end the world, and everything sucks, and it's all your fault. You know, the romance is like, your Jar Jar Binks. So
offensive statement.
It's your momentary distraction.
Yeah.
So,
and when all these big fantasy worlds are going on and romance, do you feel that authors sometimes feel, we're going to go in what we think makes a great romance, but first we're dissecting the problem first. We're breaking this down.
Sure.
Where do you think that authors feel the need to always implement a romance? Do you think that in their minds, maybe the publisher wants it there, or they know it's so ubiquitous that they just want to put in romance because it's so typical?
Well, okay. It's partly that it's typical, but also it's a fundamental part of human life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're telling if you're telling a youth story of like how they grow up and how they... you know, grow to a boy, becomes a man and all.
Coming of age story
is like, romance is a part of that story. It's a fundamental part of the human condition. So maybe they do feel like, hey, they have to include it. But often it does feel like an afterthought. And page time is not really dedicated to that. And they kind of skip a bunch of steps in typical romance. An actual romanticy will actually have. And thing is, it takes time to develop a romance, and a lot of these stories just don't dedicate that time.
The classic of Dune, for example, with Chani and Paul, this is not big spoilers at all, but this is very, very light. Basically, there's a 2-year time gap of it skips over the relationship building portion between Chani and Paul. They just, Frank Herbert essentially goes, okay, let me get back to the fun stuff for me. They end up getting along and he becomes in the front. Okay, now we're getting to the story. So,
well, also,
he skips all
not
that.
Even that. You don't even get that. You get they meet for the first time and they go through weird dream sequence where they basically, in an instant, see their entire future together and fall in love in that moment because they both see the future at that moment. It's like, you just skipped all development. She just goes like, oh yeah, I will fall in love with you, so I'm in love with you now.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Let's just skip all that.
Time skip this and now we're here.
Yep.
So that it's your authors will write what they want to write and what interests them.
Not criticizing Dune in that aspect. I think Chani in the story has a lot of important moments for Paul's character, especially, and I think it's actually kind of fascinating of like how horrified she is in that beginning of going like, holy crap, I am terrified because I'm seeing the future and I see my life with you, and I know there's realizing that fate is kind of a thing. It's weird. Cool, but is that the best romance? No.
It's cool for all the other reasons besides the romance.
It's cool for all other reasons.
That's what Frank Herbert's trying to... He's not going for anything else. Because this is the whole point of what is your book... Why are you picking up the book in the first place? Mm-hmm. And maybe we can learn something from the romance genre. Of see, what to us? Why are we upset? Not even upset. Just why do we think it sucks in fantasy sci-fi? And what makes a good romance? What are the fundamental portions of caring?
The fundamental components? Well... I don't know about you, but I think the important thing is back and forth. So it can't just be an instantaneous thing. Like, lust is kind of an instantaneous thing, but actual romance is normally a built back and forth of trust. Right. As sometimes you figure out their personality, who they are, when you start to be able to predict their behavior, and then you give them a little bit of your trust, and then they confirm that, oh, they are worthy to hold on to this, that they are trustworthy. And maybe there's some back and forth and disagreement, and the way they disagree is contentious, and there's friction, and often romance comes from friction. What romanticism does a lot. Does really well.
So on one side teeters, the other totters. It goes back and forth. There's a little bit of motion on each end where one character in the romance is... I guess romance starts with good characters. You have to care about both characters.
Yeah. Well, you have to care about one. If it's a... Here's the thing.
You have to care about their relationship either working or not working. So care enough about the character so that when they get together, it's either really satisfying for you or it hurts so much.
A great romance, you have to care about both. A acceptable romance is you care a lot about one and is tolerant of the other.
Mm, okay.
Kind of my thought. You know what I mean? Like, you care
you
so much.
And then
you ideally want the best, but if you like one of the characters so much, you're like, hey, they really care about this other character, and so I care about the relationship. You don't know them. And so it's like, you can get away with it. If you make one character really awesome, I think you can get away with a subpar partner.
I get you.
But I don't think that's the best case scenario.
Best case is you got both these characters and you're rooting for them to either get together or you want to see what their journey is. Because that whole push and pull you're talking about where the love at first sight, that thing that we're griping on, is the opposite of all of that. We're just, oh, they're in love. It's the plot point's kind of over. There's no more conflict or gravitas to it because it skips over the interesting part of a story.
But there actually is something interesting that love at first sight can lead to something interesting, I think. If, let's say, time is a factor and you just don't have that page time, you want to tell a different type of romance story of, because there's often you see romance stories of how people fall in love. Less often do you see romance stories of people that are in love and already together and how they weather the relationship and how they continue. How do they handle different challenges? I think that is an advantage to doing the love at first sight thing, because then you could quickly move on to like that type of romance story. So I will give that caveat if the author is going for that and properly shows them together and the trials that they go through. Cool. Wheel of Time actually does do that. That's what I was kind of getting on before, of like, Wheel of Time has some great examples of really bad romance and also really good romance, but none of it is good in the getting, like falling in love. The only good aspects is they are in love. How do they weather the storms?
So if you change that angle where if the whole point is the romance and them getting together and the love at first sight is the trope it uses and then boom, they're together, that's what makes it dull. But if you take a different angle, what you're saying is then it could be interesting, because what's just as interesting as falling in love could be, what if you're falling out of love?
Yeah.
And maybe something you have to learn in a relationship is, hey, we're past, this is a love story about they're already married, where these two characters are married and it's showing how in a marriage that every day, I've seen this elsewhere, this isn't just from me saying this, but every day in a marriage, you have to find new ways to fall in love with your partner. Of, it's not just, you won't get that honeymoon phase early on, you won't get that, oh, we're in spring weather, everything's great, we just went through all the great relationship stuff, it's always going to be like this, because no, one day you're both going to be old, you're going to be past your prime, and then that love won't just be off of attraction, there has to be something so much deeper than that.
Yeah.
And you have to find a new way to love your partner of, hey, there's sexual chemistry, there's intellectual chemistry, emotional chemistry, everything that's layered in the trials and tribulations you go through after that initial point is just as fascinating, going, how do you make a long-standing relationship work? Mm-hmm. That, and if you go that angle, ooh, damn. Yeah. And that's a lot of what Sword of Kaigan does. And in a very different way, in a fantasy element, that's what the relationship in that book is. It by no means a perfect relationship. It's just a
severely flawed one.
And what makes it so compelling is just read that story and go, wow, what a message. What these characters, oh my God.
You know, it's hard to even describe that as a romantic relationship.
It's a family drama.
It's a relationship.
Yeah.
Like, that's different.
Very different.
It's not really like, oh, is this a romance story? No.
No. It's two people that were married.
It's two people that are married yeah. and have some troubles to get through.
Yeah.
That's not specifically romance. But it's incredibly fascinating anyway.
Exactly. And you're kind of doing on the flip side of, if you skip over that love at first sight portion, you're doing all the heavy-handing work afterward.
Yeah.
It's just when you gloss over, and I feel the shoehorned in romance can sometimes feel a bit like, oh, okay, it's there. It's an element of the story. It's just supposed to be glossed over, not focused on. Or do you ever feel that in a fantasy book where just, oh, all of a sudden they're in love. We just read Kings of the Wild not too long ago, like Ganelon and Larkspur. I know that's a very niche reference, probably people don't know, but just two characters. Oh, love story happens.
Yeah.
It's a side element.
It's a side element and more distracting than anything else.
So a really bad romance can be, maybe we're not talking about a book that's just focused on romance, but if it detracts from the overall narrative and story, if there's something in there plot-wise that bothers you and goes, okay, that's just to ruin there. I guess that happened. And it takes away from the elements you're enjoying about it. Is that where it becomes worse?
Oh, yeah. I have the perfect example of, ooh. I will give as few details as possible for you and the audience.
Thank you. Thank you.
But one of the chief reasons why I dislike Name of the Wind, if people want to know some of the other reasons, I'm still waiting. You have to read it first, and then we'll do a review. And
I will read, Sensei.
I will give all my actual reasons. Mm-hmm. But one of them is, Quoth, the main character, is not particularly terrible to read. But when he is with the love interest, mm-hmm. when both him and the love interest are on the same page together, I hate him. I hate him so much. I don't want to read anymore. It gets a visceral reaction of like, he changes so much into a character I hate. And her. I don't like her either. But it's actively distracting where I am reading going like, when the hell is this going to end? Please let this end. Like, move on.
And that's why you hate the book so much.
Like, I'm just like, oh, when is she going to leave? Get out of the chapter, please. For the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
I loathe any moment when they get together. So that, it actively distracts from the story for me.
So don't give anything for those two characters. I don't want to get spoiled. I don't want spoilers to be out there. But taking that lesson into romance in general, what is an element of that you hate to where these two characters, did you like the characters beforehand and then not when they're together? Is that part of it?
Yeah.
You did? Okay. So part of it then is what the big part is, why are these two characters together? Why is this relationship happening and what are the reasons for it? And is the author trying to say this is love, but it ends up just being lust? Because a lot of the times it could be frustrating with a romance is it's very surface layered of these two characters had a very superficial level thing that happened that gets them in the situation. And it goes into this deep romantic love that's really just one note.
It's kind of like with a character journey where a character has learned a lesson and you don't believe they really earned it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Where the author will say, oh, look, they have such a great deep love. And it's like, I don't think they earned that. Like, it doesn't feel earned.
It's never been tested mm-hmm. as well. Because with every story, most stories, we're using a lot of very harsh words here. We're using a lot of
absolutes.
Yes. Superlatives, absolutes, yes. What I mean by that is most stories have this dark night of the soul, the moment in where our hero, or if it's a hero's journey or any other type of story where you go towards your need. What you want is this. I want this and I want money, but what I need to learn is money doesn't find happiness. It's this and this, whatever the simple aspect is. You go toward your want, realize you get you get absolutely destroyed by it, and figure out what you need to do. And if that relationship isn't tested in a very harsh and brutal way, and they get through it, but the way they get through it, the way that our two characters get through it, is through something that's essential to each of their characters and their character traits, to where nobody else could have fallen in love like they could have. Nobody else could have completed them. Where you could take anybody in the world, but it had to be A and it had to be B for this to work, because I followed their character journey. They hit the moment where everything was going wrong, but because character A is like this and B is like this, that's the reason that the relationship would work and nobody else could get through that.
Trauma bonding is a thing.
Do you feel like we've ever trauma bonded?
Maybe a little. There's things. We've gone through some stuff together. It's like a
couple things, yeah.
Yeah. We've had those like depressing moments at the kitchen table at 3 a.m. going like, oh, fuck.
Oh, dude.
Things aren't looking too great right now.
Yeah, what do we do? Oh, man, we should start a channel. And then slowly throughout our journey here, hopefully we're going to hit that dark night. We've hit many dark night of the souls.
We're eventually going to rise up and learn the lesson.
We're still on the path down. But is there something that's missing there? Of if those two characters you really care about, they hit that moment, but is there what's another layer to that? Add on to?
Okay. We already talked about the time dedicated of the back and forth of their relationship being tested. Mm-hmm. I think is very important. But beyond that, I think you need to show them not actually in love yet.
Oh,
I think you need to have a before and after. If as soon as they meet, they're basically in love, it's a static relationship. And basically static relationships are not really exciting to read.
Right.
If characters are just like, they start off as friends and that's it. It's not as exciting as like seeing the friendship be tested and going, like, uh-oh, are they still going to be friends again? Yeah. And then, oh, they become even better friends. Like an actual dynamic relationship is enjoyable to read. A lot of bad romance is static.
I got a question for you outside. And this is part of what makes romance good. What is your personal opinion on this? Mm. Is friendship the basis of a good relationship and partnership and eventual marriage and so forth?
I honestly don't know. Like, I think it's kind of wrong to think of your partner as a friend. Exactly. Because it's different. It's different, and I think a higher priority. It'd be weird to... It's not the other way around of thinking like, oh yeah, they're not your friend, they're just a trans... No, it's more important, and I think it's almost demeaning to call your romantic partner a friend.
There's when people say the word love, it means it so much.
Actually,
different...
even just saying romantic partner, like...
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a business transition. Yeah, no, we went into a partnership together. No, like,
I get what you mean.
Your wife, your husband, that is very different. That's not like your buddy old pal that you met at the bar a couple days ago and you like share some games together. No.
My roommate.
Yeah, your roommate. Like, it's different.
The slut next door. Just, but that's your, what are you talking about? It's your husband, yeah. And your wife.
I find that it's more important than a friend.
Yeah, the diction there is important with what word do you use to describe your relationships in your life? And having the layer of when we use the word love, it can mean so many different things. Mm-hmm. You love your pet different than you love your parents, your children, your husband, wife, your friends. And you could rank order those. You could sit on your little notepad. You could be like, oh, which one's going on top this time? We actually talked about that in our Q&A part two. Is where we had a whole conversation about like, oh, mm-hmm. your wife, your mother, your daughter.
And I saw some really interesting stuff based on your conversation, our conversation about that.
Do you want to really give context points of the conversation? And what did you say? Yeah.
We were just talking about like where, if you had to rank and you had to put a hierarchy on the love between your spouse and your children.
And your parents.
What ranking order do you put them in?
Right. And we had our disagreement, but I mean, neither here nor there.
Yeah, like where I would put children, spouse, then parents.
I would do spouse, children, then parents.
Yeah.
And then what would you find off of that?
Well, I thought a very interesting thing was, I've heard people talk about how it is important to put your spouse first, mm-hmm. because that is a lesson to show that you're to show your children that your children will be able to look at a good example of a healthy relationship and seeing how, oh no, daddy puts mommy first before everything. And that's what I want in my future relationship, vice versa and all that.
Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah.
That's a good point.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it is a lot of that when looking at different forms of love, mm-hmm. and loving your spouse and whatever this relationship is in a book as well, because not all relationships are equal, even with your significant other, meaning the relationship you're trying to get across in a romance book. It could be true love for forever. This could be a relationship that is meant to be. There's a literal movie titled Friends with Benefits. If mm-hmm. you know it's not love story, it's one of those. I actually haven't seen the movie. I just know it's titled Friends with Benefits. But there's different kinds of relationships, from one night stands to flings to you actually want to be with this person for the rest of your life. And depicting that accurately for what your message is important as well.
Sure.
Because you can have just as good of a story that isn't meant to be that long-term romantic partner, that's meant to be maybe, here's a good example. I won't entirely spoil it, but La La Land. Mm. La La Land is a fucking perfect movie, and I'm perfect.
I do love the movie.
It is the music, the cinematography, the story between. I mean, it doesn't hurt that you have two of my favorite actors, actresses in the business of Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling. They are the best. Emma Stone is the greatest actress. She killed it in Poor Things. Ryan Gosling, Barbie, of course, but
literally me.
They are some of my favorite ever, and the romance worked so well for me. But the man, it's hard to talk about.
Don't
want to spoil it. So
we'll not spoil it. But it's a more complex mm-hmm. take on it, of not particularly happy ending, but mm-hmm. also not a completely sad ending.
Exactly. And so it's going for a different thing than other romances would be. Where, okay, well, let's move on so we don't spoil it too much.
Yeah.
But going on to the whole message of your romance and your story. If the focal point is romance, we want you to care about this. We want you to take something away from it. Not everything's going for just happily ever after.
Yeah.
What is your favorite kind of romance to watch? Do you have your favorite movies, your favorite books that you just go, that's what I want to gobble up?
I mean, typically, romance is not my genre. So sure. It's not the biggest factor for
mine
me
either. That's why we're talking about it, because we're experts on this. We're acting like absolutely not. This is just our two cents. We're just shooting out here, and we'd much more prefer what you all think in the comments. Let us know what we're right and wrong about, or join our Patreon on Discord and tell us to our face over our monthly book club.
Tell us what we get wrong about romance, because we got a lot wrong.
Yeah, link in the description. So what do you think?
Honestly, I'm looking for. It's really heartwarming to see a relationship where a character shows another a good amount of trust and is depending on it. Throwing out, you know, basically kind of like a trust fall of like, oh, I don't know if I could trust this person, but I'm going to try. And then they actually catch them. Where you see kind of the moment of everything's grim, oh no, I'm going to lose everything. And then the romance partner comes in and actually does save the day and saves them. It's kind of like this, oh look, their trust was well-founded. That's a really enjoyable thing to see.
That is very nice. And that is goes with, do you have a favorite trope then that goes along with that? Because maybe a lot of these romance stories are focused on tropes that you can just recognize everywhere, and some work for you, some don't. Because I have a list of tropes here I could go through and just go, hey, do you like it? Do you not? And why?
I mean, generally, it's just enjoyable to see when... It's enjoyable to see when one partner like fully trusts and believes in the other. Not just like, oh, I love this person. It's, oh, no, I believe in them. That's a nice thing to see of, like, it's a little different than just like, oh, yeah, I love that person. It's, oh, no, I have complete trust in this person. I believe in their ability. That's really cool thing to see. That's
to the point where I believe in them more than I believe in myself.
Yeah. Or it, basically being able to put your trust in someone else is an enjoyable story to read.
What do you think about cheating?
Not a particular fan of it. You know, if I had to pick.
I'm working on my questions, Rich. I mean, what do you think about
I would not classify myself as a cuck.
I bet
it's not some, you know, people have their own thing.
I'll have you know, fine. I've done a podcast episode with somebody else. I've cheated once or twice. I cheated on you.
And you forgave you.
But you cheated on me too with your father. That doesn't sound right coming out. But you, oh God. I mean, you've had your father on this podcast.
What do you think about it?
I meant cheating more so as, not obviously cheating bad, of that being an element to a lot of some romance books of the Big Dark Night of the Soul or something that happens is cheating is the plot element of, can you trust your partner here? And so trust and foundation of that, someone being over-concerned about their partner cheating in life. Mm. That's because it's so prevalent in the real world, obviously it's going to be reflected in books.
I actually do know of one story with it. What's so that? This is chapter one type spoilers.
Like, give me chapter one, yeah.
Like, I'm not really spoiling too much into this book, but in Promise of Blood by Brian McClellan.
Okay.
One of the main characters is cheated on by their partner, I believe, like soon, like fiance, soon to be wife, is cheated on basically his first chapter and then has to kind of work with her going forward and like has to deal with the fallout of that and her trying to like seek forgiveness. But she's also now sort of a main character and like, I just knew like, no, I don't like this character anymore. Like, I not a fan, not a fan of it. And I know, like, my personal reaction to it, mainly because we're not getting her side of things. I just hated her character. Of like, ah, cheater. No, does not deserve my respect or trust. Go away.
Selfishness is a very easy way to get you to hate a character. If they're just a selfish person, it's a great character trait to get you against them. The harder thing to do for a book and for a romance is maybe you have that chapter one, someone cheats and you automatically write them off, but redeem them throughout the story. Because one of my favorite arcs is a redemption arc. Yeah. And you have, I want to see what camp you lie on, but do cheaters ever change?
They can, but I don't think it's worth it.
Expand on that. Oh,
I mean, my personal thought is if someone cheats on you, dead. Relationship's gone. At the bare minimum, that relationship is dead.
And what you define as cheating.
Sure, could that person change and become faithful in the future? Yeah, they could. But you have to think of the other side of you now have to be with that cheater and you're going to be anxious about it. You're never going to have that complete trust again. You're never going to be
comfortable. You can't ever completely forgive.
Well, you may be able to forgive, but you're going to be anxious. You're never going to forget. That's the problem. And at that point, you go, is it worth it? Is it worth dealing with that versus just cutting the loss and going on? Personally, now, I don't think it's ever worth it.
It does add an element when children are involved.
Yeah, but at that point, I think it's a different relationship. Like, sure, stay together for kids, forgive, but you're never really forgetting. So I think you can forgive cheating. I don't think you can ever forget it.
So you and see, that's a different relationship.
But you're saying people can change, but most, would you say most don't? Or you're just saying even if they do change, it, you can't take back what happened?
You can change, and but most time people don't change.
Mm.
I would say that it's not just, you're looking at that person of like, sure, but how do you know that they changed? You can't read their mind. You can only deal with how they've acted previously. Like, we all judge each other on each other's actions, that we are a mix of our actions and our internal thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, maybe in the, if you could read their mind, like, yeah, sure, they changed. And that person may say, hey, I went through all these things and I have changed as a person. Great. But how do I trust that? How do I know? And you're constantly going to live with that anxiety because you can only go by what they do.
Can they change their actions going forward that would build your trust ever again? Can they do things actively that would make you slowly and slowly throughout time be able to not, maybe forget's the wrong word, but be able to look and be less anxious?
You could, but how
is
many,
it worth it?
How many years is that going to take? How long? That process is so long. It's like, is that worth it?
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Basically. Like, sure. Could it be worth it?
It's very Maybe. Easy, though. Like, within a first month of a relationship, cheats. Okay, bye.
Honestly, that's
easiest solution ever.
Thankful. Like, you're going, okay.
You saved me a lot of time.
You saved me a lot of time. This is fun. Okay, cool.
But 10 years in with two kids.
Yeah.
Then, okay, well, yeah, there's a lot to think about. I'm starting to like romance a little bit, because when romance can explore all these themes, and can a cheater be forgiven? What does that look like? Can you ever forget? What does that take for the person that is cheated on? What does it take for the cheater themselves? Because we look at characters, just to give you an example of, I won't name these characters just because they go through all these arcs, but we've had characters in some of our biggest series that are ruthless, evil killers who have done more wrong than cheating.
Yep.
Like when you've killed someone, and when you've tortured people, and you've done all these heinous things, but then we watch their character and we see them as a gentle or respectable person, and we almost like we take wisdom from them, and now we listen to them, we go, they've done that in the past, but they're no longer that person, and we're taking that with evil killers. But then transfer that all the way down to cheating. You know, cheating is a very personal,
you're doing
spite.
you're betraying the trust of someone who trusts you the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very close, intimate
relationship.
It's one thing if you do something terrible to someone that you don't particularly know, and like, that's terrible and wrong. But there's a perversion to betraying the trust of someone very close to you.
Oh,
that's where I think us as humans just kind of get really revolted by it. That, and I think that, one, it plays on our deepest fear. Like, it's understandable for you to be hurt by the stranger. That makes sense to us, like, as just a species. Like, fear the stranger. You don't know them. Who are they? Can you trust them? Mm-hmm. No. But we all fear being betrayed by those closest to us. So when we see it happen in a story, we are projecting our own insecurity onto it. So why does that feel worse than seeing like the general who's slaughtering a bunch of people? It's like, that's not something we could relate to, but we can relate to, like, we're imagining our own close ones betraying us like that.
Even with tragedies too, and that's a fantastic point. Even with tragedies too, where read in the paper. We don't really read papers anymore, but we read the news and it goes, 100 people died in a plane crash. It's awful. But then you read about the one person who died in a drunk car accident, and that person was on their drive to their high school prom, and they were going to meet their date. And you say the whole story about that high schooler who was going, they're 17 years old, they got into the best college of their life, they're so excited, and they were going, and they died from a drunk driver. And then that, just the one thing, the more personal thing you can relate to, hey, my kid who is going to, you can relate to your children and going through those stages of life. Hey, I went to prom. I actually didn't go to prom, but I'm saying the general person who did go to prom. I was high school. I definitely didn't. All the women stayed away from me.
I did go to prom.
How was it? Was it fun?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. I didn't. So you have a much more personal story that I can connect and relate to that. Like the cheating, everybody can relate to that.
Yeah.
And why romance is so relatable is everybody goes through romance in their life or some sort of relationship or wants to. There's always either want, desire, a need for a relationship. Some people that don't have any experience at all or have no want or desire to, at the very least, understand it's a deeply human thing that everybody can look at with something that's connected to them. We can't all relate to, and sorry for just saying the same thing of what you're saying there, but we can't all relate to a general slaughtering people.
Well, I think it's Stalin that said something along the line. I'm paraphrasing here, but murdering 1,000 people is a massacre. Murdering a million is a statistic.
Oh, you know, you pull out
something like that.
You pull out a lot of Stalin quotes randomly and you have them really memorized. It's strange.
I paraphrase.
So cheating, just we could dive into a million reasons of what romances go through, and cheating being one of those.
Oh, yeah. There's
cruxes.
It is not a logical reason why people hate to read cheaters. Like, people have an illogical emotional reaction to cheaters versus like actual murderers in books, like people who create, like, do war crimes. Like, you don't feel the same way. Yeah. That's not logical, but it's an emotionally understandable reaction.
I should care more about the 100 people that died in a plane crash, not the one car crash.
But you do
because that's how stories work. That's how our emotions are. That's how we value things. And to go with the whole cheating thing off of that, is there any worse thing that your partner could do?
I mean, there's a lot of literal worse things. Like,
is there any worse things besides death? You know, besides,
I mean,
getting
commit
to that?
Crimes. I mean, yeah. Basic. But cheating is, you can think of it as very broad, because there's something like emotional cheating, which is not the same as a physical cheating, but I think it's both hits to the same thing of a betrayal of trust and stepping out of the relationship. So other than that, I mean, I don't think there's too much worse. That's basically an end to, like,
the worst without legal repercussion kind of thing.
Exactly. Like, yeah, you could do worse where you're actually hurting your partner. Yeah, like, that's,
like,
you know,
abuse.
Abuse is worse. But if you take off legal repercussions, take the
law and society,
it's the worst thing you could do that's not illegal.
Yeah. That's a good distinguishing factor. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a couple things here of some general tropes, and I want to see what our thoughts are on this. Something like opposites attract. What do you think about those kind of stories? Do you think that's generally true as well?
It's true, especially in the beginning, because I think friction and conflict can be very hot and spicy.
Oh, say that again for the people in the back.
Hey, look, that's like romantic-y stuff. Like,
oh, I just haven't heard you say hot and spicy. Like,
oh, okay. Sorry.
That's not a very Richard phrase to say.
No, but it's true.
Yeah.
No, it with two people are the same. It's like, it's comfortable, but that's kind of boring. But it's fun when you have two completely different personalities kind of butting heads against each other, and that friction is attractive.
What about forbidden love?
Oh, yeah. Basically, novelty is attractive. Something new, something different.
Something you can't have, too.
Yeah.
So everybody wants what they can't have. Ooh, this is forbidden. This person's not like me. Not like the other girls. That's more being reductionist about it. But those kind of tropes can work when done well. And when they're done well, it seems like you just need characters to care about and actual relationship to be tested, rather than seem so surface level with you don't believe in the relationship if it seems so untested.
Yeah. I mean, we never really got to that point with Wheel of Time, but I do want to talk about, like, why I like the romance in the Wheel of Time eventually. That, like, it's a significant problem in the early books.
But then it gets better.
The main thing is, once they are in relationships, they are put through tests.
So it's the latter half.
Exactly. Like, they're actually, like, when they're in a relationship, like, they have to trust each other, and they go through things together, and you see moments of, like, oh, wow, look at that.
Right.
It's the push and pull that they have when they're together that actually is enjoyable to read. So, but them getting in love, yeah, it's boring.
Getting in love
shit
was bad, but them dealing with the love they have is good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Not all of them. Okay. A couple of them are still bad.
Okay. Good clarification. Yeah. You know, I'm still not reading on. This is not convincing me.
I know.
I stopped at book four. No further. I'm going to go enjoy my life now in peace. I'm gonna. I would rather read. I actually did enjoy ACOTAR way more than Wheel of Time.
That hurts me.
What do you think we can learn from books like 50 Shades of Grey and romance? Because it's one of the most uber successful. Wait, is romance the right word? I don't know.
It's smut.
Relationship. Is that that's one of the most successful books with a relationship out there. What can we learn from that?
Many things that could. Yeah, if you were to base your thoughts on romance and women by using 50 Shades of Grey, you're gonna have a very twisted, fucked up view of women.
I think
that's not a good example. that's women right there. 50 Shades of Grey.
Mm-hmm. Hey, also the flip
side, that's all of them.
I don't know the story other than I've seen some clips from the movies. A lot of times, I really like watching those clips now. I think it's also the reverse is true of if that's what you think men are like.
Yeah.
Because I don't know too much about the story. Could you explain it to me?
I'd rather not.
I'm just acting dumb. I've read it so many times. Like, you don't have to.
Okay, I'm giving you the excuse.
Yeah.
I'm giving plausible deniability.
Yeah. So what Richard said there, I think that's a good lesson to learn. Don't use 50 Shades of Grey as the template. Use this podcast as the most fucked up template of just our random thoughts on romance and fantasy.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We'll see you all next episode.
Bye, all.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.